Riding that midnight train to Georgia, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The roadside vegetable stand of Medicare podcasts. He attended 3 Beatles concerts full of screaming girls and never heard a note. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
It makes me laugh to bring you another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, Drew McMillan, for your fantastic introduction. I know he said something complimentary about me. I just don't know what it is. And I probably won't know it until I hear the episode myself, just like you're hearing it now. So welcome to another episode, Medicare for the Lazy Man. That's the book I wrote a bunch of years ago, and I keep updating it to help introduce people to Medicare. Medicare is kind of an alien concept. It's a government program that everybody age 65 or sometimes much older than age 65 winds up joining. And the government doesn't do a very good job of explaining it. They don't do a very good job of simplifying the explanation. So that's what we're here for. When I say we, I'm talking about me. I'm talking about my magnificent engineer who makes this podcast sound so much better than it ever would without me, and that's Randy Carson. So Randy and I often come to you during the course of the week, 3 times a week, typically, to talk about Medicare and to talk about what's been happening in our lives and to explain to you that you can go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, and you can get Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022 in hardcover form, in paperback form, in Audible form, or in Kindle ebook form. You can get it in any of those 4 editions, and it will take you a fairly short period of time to plow through it. I often say if you move your lips when you read, it might take a little bit longer, but otherwise you can expect to be completely finished with it in just over an hour. And once you have finished it, you're going to know more about Medicare than the vast majority of people that you will ever meet in your whole life. I would say the vast majority of all Americans, even including government officials, because those people seem to be very easily confused. In any event, so I mentioned Randy Carson. Let's bring him into the podcast and see if he can entertain us a little bit with his more recent goings on. Randy, how is life treating you lately?
Very well. Thanks for asking. I have something that's been on my mind, and I just wanted to check in with you on it to see, you know, how you were doing with those 453 COVID tests per month that you're allowed to get now.
Well, as luck would have it, I had COVID back when I returned from Illinois early in February, COVID and pneumonia combined. And so I haven't felt the need to use any of those tests that I'm getting free from the government. In fact, I stopped asking for them.
That's almost like the trifecta. You know, you got pneumonia.
Yep.
You got COVID, and you were just looking for one more. What would you have added in there as the third choice?
Oh, probably an automobile accident or something like that. Yeah, it was kind of funny. I went to the hospital one day. I could barely drag myself there. So I took Mary's car and I went down to our new little 8-bed hospital, Abrazo Health, at the corner of Carefree Highway and Cave Creek Road. And I said, I think I'm sick. And they said, really? Tell me all about it, the guy at the desk. And I said, well, if I had to, you know, if you held a gun to my head, I would say that I have pneumonia. And I probably have something else too. I feel like poo-poo doo-doo. And so they said, well, listen, we'll be the judge of that. You and Dr. Google are not worthy of diagnosing anything in our facility. We'll tell you what you have. And about an hour later, they came in and said, you know, something, you were right and we were wrong. So we're sorry that we made fun of you. And it was the beginning of my curative period, because I was able to take my prescriptions that they gave me for penicillin and all that stuff and hand them to Mary and take a long nap without being disturbed. Nobody called me lazy. Nobody told me to get up and do some work. It was wonderful to be able to have a good excuse to sleep for lengthy periods of time. So that was early February, and it all went away fairly quickly.
So you might be, well, you and I might be the only humans left in the world that can take straight up penicillin. I mean, like the nuclear weapon of antibiotics.
Yeah, it seems like everybody else has all these allergies. Every time we get together with people, they talk about their allergies they've got. Can you take amoxicillin? No, I'm allergic to it. Mary thinks she's allergic to penicillin because she had penicillin when she had mono or something back when she was a kid. And penicillin that was given to her caused her to break out in hives or something like that. So now for the rest of her life, she avoids it. And I say, you probably aren't really allergic to it. It was probably just the mono that you had at the time.
Well, because I don't think, well, I shouldn't say this because I'm going to find something now, but I've never been allergic, really allergic to anything that I knew of. So, you know, when I'm on penicillin, I sit there, you know, popping the penicillin pills with my peanuts. I take peanuts with it too.
Sure. Well, so you got something to chew on. Well, I had back surgery back in 2003, I think it was. And my surgeon was a no nonsense kind of guy. And he said, here, I'm not going to operate on you until you're begging me to. So here's a prescription for Vicodin. And, the bottle told me take 2 every 4 hours to a maximum of so many capsules per day. And after a few days, I called a guy up and I said, look, I'm not begging you for surgery yet, but I'm begging you for something stronger than Vicodin. I don't know what this stuff is. And I know the druggies just love Vicodin, but I said, this stuff doesn't do anything for me. And he said, take more. And I said, well, I'm taking the maximum that the instructions on the bottle allow. He said, no, you're not listening to me. Take more. Like no limit. And so I
more.
Well, I found out how to make Vicodin work as a painkiller for me. And that was to take a bunch of Vicodin and then swill a bunch of booze with it. And mixing Vicodin and booze was the only solution that caused me to have less pain.
So in reality, you know, what I'm hearing you say is the Vicodin could have been just sugar pills. And it was actually the booze that was helping you out.
Mary has described me as a horse. She said, you know, things don't work on you. Normal side effects just don't happen to me for some reason. All those lawyer crappy, you know, warnings on things that you might have you might go blind in one eye and all that stuff. That crap never happens to me. And so I could take 5 times as much of apparently whatever I take than I do. And I'm not going to be at risk. Hey, listen, speaking of risk, I heard from one of our old buddies, Dominic Regina. And he asked a real good Medicare question, and I have an answer for that, but I'm going to put that in the mailbag, you know, our MLM mailbag that every once in a while we get an episode where I dredge a few letters out and people have asked questions and I will answer them. But he also said, I have a way for you to stump the audio engineer. So how would you like to play stump the audio engineer today, Randy?
Oh, absolutely. Ready to do it.
All right. Now, this one, you're going to have to put your way back or get into your way back machine and return to your childhood. And if you're like me or my brother and I, we'd sit there and stare at comedy movies from the olden days, you know, black and white movies. And it was a different world, a different time, the Three Stooges and so forth. And in this case, here is the way that Dominic phrased his first question. The question was, who are some of the members of the International Silver String Submarine Band? Does that ring any bells?
Wow.
The Silver String Submarine Band.
I have no idea.
I didn't either. When I read this, I thought, has Dominic flipped his lid? And so I had to actually do a little Googling on my own to confirm what he gives in the answer. He said, acceptable answers are the Little Rascals, or if you want to be more specific, Stymie, Butch, and Spanky. So apparently the Little Rascals.
That would be the Little Rascals. I know all those names as related to the Little Rascals, but I think what threw me is you were talking about the Three Stooges, because I read I read an article. Well, didn't read it. I was watching an YouTube video special last night on the Three Stooges and the Fourth Stooge and, you know, all that whole thing.
Okay. Well, no, I mentioned it just because my brother and I used to sit there and watch shows that filmed or that had old films like Our Gang and Three Stooges and, even as recent as, who is the tall, skinny guy and the short, fat guy? And I'm not talking about Oliver Hardy and Stan Laurel. But anyway, so I was just thinking about those guys. Whatever happened to the Keystone Cops? Weren't they very popular at one time?
They were. They were. I haven't heard about them for a long time. I'll have to do a little bit of research on that.
Well, I had to Google this International Silver String Submarine Band, and I came up with a story of one episode of the Little Rascals where they, or Our Gang, I guess they were called when they were in their original format. But apparently they all, they had to do something for a, some kind of a show that they were wanted to be in. They wanted to be in a talent show. And so they got together and formed their International Silver String Submarine Band. And they also performed a song. And so Dominic thinks that I should have asked you what the song was, but I don't want to stump you to a painful extent. So I'll just tell you that the song they played in this episode of the Little Rascals was The Daring Young Man on the Flying Trapeze. But I'm going to put his original question in the mailbag for future reference. And I'm going to go right.
Well, I'm glad to hear. So I assume Dominic's doing okay. I'm glad to hear. I'm glad to hear about him.
Appears to be just fine. What was his? Let's see. He was asking about Irma. See, I think he's doing better than fine. He's asking about Irma, and that means he's a successful guy. He's earning enough money that the government is coming to pick his pocket to get additional money. Normally, the Part B of Medicare costs you $170.10 a month if you're an average guy. And if you're a successful guy, they're going to come back and hit you with an Irma penalty, and it's going to be something in which they reach into your pocket and take even more money from you.
So I'm assuming that Irma penalties have nothing to do with the fact that you have a wife named Irma.
Nope, nothing at all. In fact, Irma is an acronym that stands for Income Related Monthly Adjustment Amount. And I refer to it as the success penalty. And yeah, as a matter of fact, Dominic referred to it that way, too.
So I'm making so much money that you need to take some more from me.
Yeah, that's right. And they do it for year by year. They look back 2 years. And if you made a ton of money 2 years ago, then they're going to penalize you for it this year. And then next year, they're going to look back at 2 years from next year. And if you made a bunch of money on that year, then you're going to get hit again with an Irma penalty. So, and that could go on the rest of your life until you stop earning money. And 2 years later, they'll stop hitting you with the Irma penalty. And it's a very irritating thing. It's not a huge monetary expense. It's just irritating. You know, it's like if you've got a neighbor, you don't really hate the neighbor. They're just irritating. You don't like them being in your neighborhood, but they don't really cause you a lot of difficulty. So anyway, last time we didn't really get going until about 18 minutes into the episode. We're at now 13 and a half minutes.
We were really rolling. It had nothing to do with Medicare, but we were rolling.
I don't know what got us all cranked up, but let's try to be a little more disciplined in our use of the time. So I've got an article here from the Kaiser Health News, which people tell me is a pretty reliable source of information. Doesn't have a political axe to grind. It's mostly factually accurate reporting. So here's the situation. A woman named Linda Griffith signed up for a Medicare prescription drug plan. What I do with my clients or anybody who asks me is I will find them the least expensive Medicare prescription drug plan that will cover all of their drugs for the most reasonable cost possible. And that's going to be a different plan in different locations with different people with different medication needs that also have different favorite prescription or favorite pharmacies that they patronize. And so you throw all those elements into a big black box that I've got on my desk here, and I crank the crank, and pretty soon out come 25 or 27 health plans, actually prescription drug plans, listed in the order of the annual out-of-pocket cost for the client. And so this woman apparently had somebody who said to her, here is the best plan for you. And she signed up for this Medicare prescription drug plan during last fall's enrollment period. It always, that period comes at the end of each year. You can pick a different drug plan if you want to for your following year. So you pick the plan sometime between October, November, and then it starts covering you in January, and you take your new ID card to the drugstore, and the druggist fills your prescription and asks you for a couple of bucks maybe, and you are on your way. So she picked a drug plan from a company that, you know, I can slam this company an awful lot, but I do represent them when they do have a good product. So I'm not going to use the name of this company now, but she picked a plan from this major insurance company, and it's because it had low prices. And with help from her longtime insurance agent and Medicare's Plan Finder, those are the tools I use. I am a longtime insurance agent, and I use the Medicare.com or Medicare.gov Plan Finder. So they use that to compare a dizzying array of options. But instead of the $70.09 she expected to pay for her drug, which is multisyllabic dextroamphetamine, I guess it is. It looks a lot longer than that. Used to treat attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder, her pharmacist told her, well, she was led to believe it was going to cost about $70 to have her prescription filled. Her pharmacist told her she owed $276. And the woman said, I did not pick up that prescription because I thought something was wrong. She's 73 years old, a retired construction company accountant who lives in the Northern California town of Weaverville. To me, when you purchase a plan, you have an implied contract, she said. I say I will pay the premium on time for this plan, and they're going to make sure that I get the drug for a certain amount. But it often doesn't work that way. As early as 3 weeks after Medicare's drug plan enrollment period ends on December 7th, insurance plans can change what they charge for the members of their plan for drugs, and they can do it repeatedly. This woman, Griffith's prescription out-of-pocket cost has varied each month, and through March, she has already paid $433 more than she expected to. A recent analysis by, a recent analysis by ARP, which is lobbying Congress to pass legislation to control drug prices, compared drug makers' list prices between the end of December 2021, shortly after the December 7th sign-up deadline, and the end of January 2022, just a month after the new Medicare drug plans all began. Researchers found that the list prices for the 75 brand-name drugs most frequently prescribed to Medicare beneficiaries had risen as much as 8%. Medicare officials acknowledged that manufacturers' prices and out-of-pocket costs charged by the insurers can fluctuate. Your plan may raise the copayment or coinsurance you pay for a particular drug when the manufacturer raises their price or when a plan starts to offer a generic form of a drug. But no matter how high the prices go, most plan members cannot switch to a cheaper drug plan after January 1st. Drug manufacturers usually change the list price for drugs in January and occasionally again in July, but they can increase prices more often if they want to. That's true for any health insurance policy, not just for Medicare drug plans. Like a car's sticker price, a drug's list price is the starting point for negotiating discounts, in this case, between insurers or their pharmacy benefit managers and drug manufacturers. If the list price goes up, the amount the plan member pays may go up too. The discounts that insurers or their pharmacy benefit managers receive don't typically translate into lower prices at the pharmacy counter. Instead, these savings are used to reduce premiums or slow premium growth for all beneficiaries. Medicare's prescription drug benefit, which began in 2006, was supposed to take the surprise out of filling a prescription. But even when, and I hate this word, seniors, oh, God, I'm not a senior. Stop calling us silly names. Even when Medicare participants have insurance coverage for drugs, many still can't afford them. We hear consistently from people who have absolute sticker shock when they see not only the full cost of the drug, but their cost sharing. The potential for surprises is growing. More insurers have eliminated co-payments, a set dollar amount for a prescription, and instead charge members a percentage of the drug price. The drug benefit is designed to give insurers the flexibility to make changes, and that is one of the reasons why we're asking Congress to give us authority to negotiate drug prices. CMS, that's the government agency that oversees Medicare, and they can't figure out how to properly spell their own acronym. It should be CMMS because it's the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, but they call themselves CMS. So we'll call them CMS, even though it's wrong to do that. CMS also is looking at ways to make drugs more affordable without waiting for Congress to act. We're always trying to consider where it makes sense to be able to allow people to change plans. And I think they should probably allow people to change plans when the plan decides to change underneath the participant that bought that plan. You know, the same thing happens to Medicare Advantage plans. They can change all their stuff in the middle of the year. If your doctor's in the network and they decide they don't want to pay your doctor's rate and the doctor quits the network, that's a plan change you can't do a thing about until the end of the year when you can enroll in a different competing plan. So anyway, on April 22nd, CMS unveiled a proposal to streamline access to the Medicare Savings Program, which helps low-income enrollees. Doesn't help anybody else, apparently. So anyway, after Linda Griffith left the pharmacy without her medication, she spent a week making phone calls to her drug plan, her pharmacy, Social Security, and Medicare, but still couldn't find out why the cost was so high. I finally just had to give in and pay it because I need the meds. I can't function without them. But she didn't give up. She appealed to her insurance company for a tier reduction, meaning the tier in which they assigned her medication, like tier 3, tier 4, tier 5. The higher the tier, the more expensive the drug. But she didn't give up. She appealed to her insurance company, and her appeal was denied. The plan denied two more requests for price adjustments, despite assistance from a program manager for five California counties served by the Health Insurance Counseling and Advocacy Program. They are now appealing directly to the government. It's important for us to work with our members who have questions about any out-of-pocket costs that are higher than the member would expect. However, Griffith, this poor woman, said she received a call from an executive from the insurance company who said the company had received an inquiry from the media. After they discussed the problem, Griffith said the woman told her the plan finder is an outside source and therefore not reliable information. Now, that's a government function on their website. So I'm not sure that's accurate, but this woman from the insurance company assured Griffith that she would find out where the plan finder information had come from. So what she was saying was that the research that was done on the government website was wrong. Instead of paying $70 for her drug, she had to pay $276 for her drug because of inaccurate information provided on the government website. I would say that insurance company is probably stretching to make up an excuse. So the CMS requires the insurance companies to update their prices every 2 weeks. So this woman ends the article by saying, I want my money back and I want to be charged the amount I agreed to pay for the drug. I think this needs to be fixed because other people are going to be cheated. Well, the deal is that she said, I'm going to buy a plan because it's a reasonable price for me based on the information acquired from the Medicare.gov website. And had they changed the price of that drug, then it turns out a different plan probably would have been cheaper. So unfortunately, she wasn't allowed to go back after the first of the year. She was not allowed to pick out a plan that's more appropriately priced for her, that treats her drug more benignly. And she's stuck with it all year long. That's the nature of prescription drug plans, which we kind of have, And that's the nature of Medicare Advantage plans, which almost nobody has to have, as Randy and I have been warning people for years. So sad story, but fortunately not a deal breaker for this woman. You know, a few hundred bucks, uncomfortable, but not life changing. I hope. I don't know. Randy's still shocked. Shell shocked.
So it's kind of like when I went to buy a new car, I agreed to pay X number of bucks for my Jeep.
Yep.
And before I got to the bank to, sign the papers, they increased the price by 30%. Have you ever had that happen, Doug?
I never buy new cars. I will say that I started to buy a new Jeep years ago, much longer ago than you did. Now, this is back in 1978. I called up our local Jeep dealer and I said, hey, I would like to buy a new Jeep. What would it cost me? And I was really on a fact-finding mission. And they said, new Jeep, do you want a CJ5 or a CJ7? I said, what's the difference? They told me. I said, okay, let's go with a CJ7. What's that going to cost? They said, $5,200. I said, how about a CJ5? And they said, $5,100. I said, okay, I'm going to be right down with my checkbook. And they said, let me ask a few other questions. And I said, okay, what else can I tell you? What's your name? What's your address? Blah, blah, blah. By the way, about your new vehicle that we're going to have ready for you, would you like a seat? And I said, you mean like a passenger seat? No, a driver's seat. I said, well, sure. What the heck? Okay. That's going to be another.
Yeah, I'll take one of those.
How about a passenger seat? Sure. How about a back seat? Okay. How much is that? And then they said, would you like a top? Well, it's Illinois and it gets to be winter. I think so. Would you like a heater? Sure. Throw in a heater. And all these things were reasonably priced. But at the end of the conversation, I was kissing $9,000. And this is back
for
in the 70s.
For a CJ7?
For a CJ5.
Holy bananas. Oh, five. Okay.
I mean, I scaled it back to save $100 on the five. But I'm telling you right now, there was so little included in the vehicle purchase. I mean, I wanted a V8. I did not want one of their little four bangers. And so I had to upgrade everything. And it was kind of an expensive proposition. So what I did, instead of buying a new vehicle, a new Jeep, I went out and bought a used one. It was 2 years old. It had a V8. It had big giant wheels and tires and a body lift and all that. No, it wasn't a body lift. I mean, the suspension was lifted. And I swear the salt had eaten away most of it in the first 2 years of its life. And it was, I had to get a road sign, some kind of a, no parking sign, and put it under the carpeting so my feet didn't fall through the floor.
So I'm envisioning, you looking like Fred Flintstone, paddling down through the floor.
That would have been the case. But in my case, I had access to a sign that I was able to put under the carpeting. And it was, I got a snowplow for it and I made a bunch of beer money plowing snow. If it snowed on a Friday night or a Saturday night, I was out there with my friend and we'd get a case of beer, throw it in the back seat and basically just go plow people's driveways. And so that was nice for the cash flow infusion. And the Jeep, did a nice job. It was a beautiful Jeep. I just loved that thing, but it started rusting out underneath the windshield. If you can imagine that, I would drive to the train station on a rainy morning and my suit pants would be soaked from the knees down because the water would run.
No.
It was just rust city.
Oh my gosh. So your story about everything was an option.
Yes.
I've heard a story recently about another vehicle that's just the same way. Have you ever heard of those new electrical vehicles called Rivian?
No, I haven't. I thought you were going to say Medicare Advantage, but
no. Well, Rivian, we'll talk about this next time, but there's a new company. I think they're based out of Chicago called Rivian. It's an electronic, electric vehicle, chargeable sort of a deal, but I don't think they sell cars. I think it's delivery vehicles.
Oh, okay.
So an acquaintance of mine, as in my daughter's father-in-law, is in the business that needs, vehicles like this. Mm-hmm. So he's had one of these Rivians ordered for about 400 years. They came out before they even had any. You give us some money to put down and we'll build you a Rivian someday. So there's that. So but in the process, everything is literally an option. Oh, you want wheels? Yeah, yeah, I'll take some wheels. Drive, you want to, do you really want a steering wheel? Yeah, yeah, I kind of need a steering wheel. But it's like that. And bottom line is now in the, after you got all that worked into the deal, then they started raising the price on the original options because their price was going up. So,
so let me ask you how many Rivians he has in his fleet.
Zero.
Zero. Okay. Okay.
There hasn't been one delivered yet.
Oh, man. I've never heard that name. I remember fondly the Buick Riviera from the 1960s, but this is totally unrelated to that, I'm guessing.
Well, if you want a really, really interesting story about, you know, the current state of ordering rechargeable vehicles, electrical vehicles, whether they be cars or whether they be delivery, look up Rivian. It's an interesting story, and I hope someday he gets one of them. But right now, it looks like it's a long ways off.
Well, they're not getting enough government money. That's what makes these things work is government tax money that they take from us. They extract it from us at gunpoint, and they turn around and hand it to people that are making products of marginal value. I don't think that's the way to go. Wait until these things are perfected.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, now there are some electric vehicles that are high. Let me say hybrid, okay?
Yeah.
The Rivian supposedly is a totally electric sort of a deal.
Yeah.
Now, hybrids like, you know, the Prius, you know, the Toyota Prius, all that stuff. They've been around for decades, and they're doing
Back in the 70s, the golf course down the road from us had hybrid golf carts. And it was fantastic because you would accelerate, you know, put your foot on the accelerator after you've hit your ball, and the electric motor would not only start the cart moving, but it would spin the starter on the gasoline engine, and that gasoline engine would start up, and you would go zooming down that golf course faster than heck. And it was fantastic. It was a lot of fun.
Yep. Yep. Oh, I totally get it. Well, you know, we have pretty well used up our fuel.
Oh, boy. Well, I do enjoy reminiscing about the olden days.
Yes, but I do, too.
Anyway,
I'm too much sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. We sound like old fogies.
Not me. Mm. I've got socks older than some people in my neighborhood.
Well, anyway, well, close out so everybody can go home.
Yeah, we need to send them all home because we're out of fuel. We talked about, did we talk about all the audio and the Kindle and the paperbacks and all that?
I think at the very beginning of the episode, I kind of talked about that. It never hurts to repeat it, I suppose.
No, no. The other thing I wanted to mention, and I'm looking for the people on the audience to help me out here. Doug has been somewhat depressed lately, because he hasn't gotten anything in the mailbag news. So send him some mail at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. At least say hi. If not, you know, comment on what we do here, because we really enjoy doing it. And we always enjoy hearing from you. There's also the new paperback, the 2022 version of Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's the green one with the green 2022 on it, the audio version, the Kindle version, and that's about it. How else could we send them out? I think that's about all the various forms of media that we could do, right?
Yeah, that's close enough. If they can't have us on the podcast, they can have four different kinds of Medicare for the Lazy Man books, and that's all anybody should ever need to learn about Medicare.
Yes. So anyway, give it a thought. Go to Amazon.com and, you know, order whatever you want. I mean, we're thinking about, not today, but we're thinking about putting out a special.
And so if you like it, by the way, don't forget to leave a review, because they took away all the reviews. And so I started out with brand new reviews. I got a bunch of 5 stars, 3, 4, and then some douchebag decided to put in a 1-star review. Didn't say anything, just clicked on a 1-star. So I need
You know why that is? You know why that is, don't you?
Because he wishes he had a Medicare Advantage plan instead?
No. He can't read.
Oh, okay. Or maybe he can't count how many stars. Oh, yeah, 1-star has got to be great.
Yeah, 1-star review. There is that. There is that possibility. So anyway, we're going to close up shop for today. Thanks for joining us. We have a lot of fun talking to you, and we always enjoy having you back. But you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy, and now the guy holding down the fort, literally in the Fortress of Solitude, up in the mountains above Cave Creek, Arizona, Doug Jones.
Bye-bye.